recently attended a baby shower for a couple who had decided they did not want to know the gender of their baby before she or he was born. They decorated the nursery in gender-neutral colors, lots of yellows and grays, with giraffes and elephants and lions and other animals adorning the blankets and the walls. I was kind of surprised then when one of the shower attendees remarked that gray was a masculine color and wild animals were something a boy would prefer. And I thought to myself, really? Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, June 3rd. Is gender stereotyping and color coding our kids and treating our kids differently based on gender still an issue in 2014? Our guest this hour says yes, and perhaps even more so than it used to be. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guest. Christia Spears Brown is an associate professor of developmental psychology at the University of Kentucky. She is the author of the book Parenting Beyond Pink and Blue: How to Raise Your Kids Free of Gender Stereotypes. She also writes a regular online column, Beyond Pink and Blue, for Psychology Today. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. So you're not surprised by my shower story, I bet.
No. And I think that's what always is so interesting, is that people find what seems to be really neutral things, for example, gray, and makes them gendered, right? Where it's really kind of irrelevant, but yet we like to make everything as gendered as possible.
Yeah. So why do we do that?
I think it really is the way humans like to think. There's a lot of research in social psychology that shows, as humans, the world is really complex, and we like to categorize. No matter what the category is, we like to put things in two simple boxes. It makes us navigate a complicated world much easier, and pink and blue are two good boxes to sort people. And not worry about all the minute details of an individual. Let's just put them into, this is what girls like, this is what boys like, and I can get through my day a lot quicker.
Yeah. You know, this couple, the mother-to-be, mm-hmm. was also at this shower asked by countless attendees, even though they knew, most of them knew, that the choice was made not to know the gender of the child before the birth of the child. And they were asking, do you still not know if you're having a boy or a girl? I mean, we want to know. And then they started guessing what the baby was right. going to be based on the size of the mother-to-be's belly.
Right. We are, I think, obsessed with it. And a similar phenomenon is when you have a baby. For example, I always had bald, I have two daughters, but they were pretty bald when they were born. And people would often call them boys, just simply because they were in kind of neutral clothes, but they didn't have the, you know, bow scotch tape to their head. And they would accidentally say, you know, what a cute boy that is. And then when I would correct them or say, you know, her name is Grace, they would be horrified. Again, it's that we really like things in the category and we like knowing the category. And we're really uncomfortable if we either don't know or we put them in the wrong category.
Yeah. So what's the harm if some of us want to, you know, have pink for girls and blue for boys?
Well, there's been a lot of research on this, actually. And we know that sorting and organizing the world based on gender teaches kids that gender is the most important thing about them. So when we always say, good morning, boys and girls, or when we have the pink bedroom and the pink stroller and everything that the daughter wears is pink and the shirt says, you know, my little princess, and everything is color-coded for gender, and we refer to their gender when we talk to them, what a smart girl you are, you know, what a good girl, you're eating your peas, that actually increases gender stereotypes, because it's a cue to kids to pay attention. Mom always labels my gender. Everything I wear is based on my gender. All of my toys are color-coded for my gender. It must be really important. Let me figure out all the ways to be the right kind of girl, because everyone keeps telling me, labeling my gender every time they talk to me and every time they dress me, so it must be really important. And so what we see is that kids then tune into that and really cue into this really important label, and that makes their stereotypes even stronger.
Well, is gender not important at all?
No, I think it is important, but I like to use the analogy that I think gender is a lot like height. It's biological, it's unchangeable, it's obvious. And so, for example, I'm pretty short, no denying it, and it determines some things about me. You know, I'm not likely to be a basketball great. I need help putting luggage in an overhead bin, but it doesn't define me. It doesn't tell me much about me as an individual just because you know this one biological trait about me. And I think gender is pretty similar. It tells us some things, and in some situations it's relevant, but not nearly as relevant as we like to make it.
Yeah. Better to call a little girl a smart girl than a pretty girl all the time?
I would say even saying a smart girl is not great, because it's still saying girl is the most important thing about you. I'm going to talk about that every time I talk about you. So I say, what a smart kid. Uh-huh. Or I can even say, wow, you look pretty, if I know she's put effort into dressing up. I think really it's trying to take gender out of the equation more often. Mm-hmm. So, wow, you're being a smart, you know, you're being really smart right now. So I recommend using more kind of neutral language. So what a smart kid, what a great kid. Oh, you're working really hard at that. Mm-hmm. So focus on the trait and what we want to foster and not the label all the time.
So what are some of the most common gender stereotypes that this sort of color coding and segregation can lead into?
Well, for boys, it's that boys should, again, the idea is that boys shouldn't cry, should be tough, should be aggressive, should be stoic, and should be highly athletic and active. And we know that a lot of boys aren't any of those things. A lot of boys are not aggressive and are quiet and somewhat meek. And that's also perfectly normal. But if we constantly focus on them being boys, they try to be much kind of tougher and rougher than they naturally are. For girls, it's some of the more damaging stereotypes for girls are particularly all the focus on their appearance, right? And so we know that girls have much worse body image than boys do. By the time girls are 12 years old, 70% of them are unhappy with their bodies. It can start as early as third grade. So for girls, it's the constant focus on being a girl makes them want to be a certain kind of girl. And really the only girls they ever see are the really thin, pretty, somewhat sexualized girl version. And so that pushes girls to want to be that kind of girl. And that we know is really dangerous for them. And then there's always the academic ones, right? So the stereotype that girls aren't as good at math, and we know that girls pull out of math and feel much less confident in their abilities. Even though they do really well in math, they feel less confident and more anxious about math. And boys, again, become more and more aggressive. The more they endorse stereotypes, the more aggressive they become.
Yeah, we have a comment from Richard on Facebook who says, after reading your guest bio, it appears she is confusing gender stereotyping with premature sexualization. What's your response to that?
I think that premature sexualization is gender stereotyping. I think for girls, that's what it is. We actually do, in my own research lab, we do research looking at that, and that kids think to be a proper girl, you need to be pretty, thin, and sexualized. So I think that is the modern, in 2014, I think most of us recognize that girls can be hard workers and girls can be strong. I think in 2014, the gender stereotype for girls is that they should be pretty and sexualized.
Yeah, just to talk a little bit more about how this is harmful, that if a little girl based on this gender stereotyping is prematurely sexualized or has a poor body image, what is the consequence?
That's associated with increase in eating disorders, lower self-esteem, higher rates of depression, higher rates of anxiety, wanting to avoid school more often, and at its most extreme, more severe levels of depression, which can lead to thoughts of hurting oneself.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the extreme version, but what's not as extreme is eating disorders. Many, many girls have some form of an eating disorder. High rates of anxiety and high rates of what we call depressive symptoms, who aren't happy with how they look. And I think, you know, we want our girls to feel comfortable with how they look. Because, this isn't related to what their bodies are actually like. This is just they are all largely unhappy with them because they look to an example that's really impossible to achieve.
And if society is stereotyping boys and they are turning out to be tougher and rougher than they might normally be, the consequences of that?
Well, I think we teach boys, for one, that boys don't cry, which we know from research that boys, when they're young, cry just as much as girls do. There's no difference in feeling sadness. But we teach boys to bottle it up and don't express sadness, don't talk about your feelings, but then every toy we give them involves a gun, for example. And so what happens then is you have boys who learn not to express negative feelings as sadness or to talk about them, but to be aggressive. And then you look at our rates of crime for boys, right? And so every time we see in the news where some terrible thing happens, it's a boy. Because we really do, and that's, again, the extreme example of when things go awry. But it teaches boys don't talk about feeling sad, don't feel sadness. That's not an okay emotion. But aggression is all right. And so we see them lash out much more.
We are talking with the author of Parenting Beyond Pink and Blue, How to Raise Your Kids Free of Gender Stereotypes. Christia Spears Brown is here to answer your questions or respond to your views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about how gender stereotypes harm children with Christia Spears Brown, an associate professor of developmental psychology at the University of Kentucky and author of the book Parenting Beyond Pink and Blue, How to Raise Your Kids Free of Gender Stereotypes. And if you have an example you'd like to share or a question, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Let's take a call from John in Madison. Hi, John.
Hi. Well, this is an interesting topic. There was a study that came out of the University of Pennsylvania late last year, 1,000 subjects, and they found using diffusion tensor imaging, a new form of looking at the brain, that at adolescence, some stereotypes did pop out. And the stereotypes were this, that male brains are wired stronger front to back in any particular hemisphere, left or right, compared to women, and women's brains are connected stronger through the corpus callosum. The left and right brains have stronger connections. And what this correlates with is better map reading skills for males, and for women, better word and face recognition, and also social cognition, the intuitive way of thinking. In other words, you know immediately without going through any kind of rational process, is much better in women. And what these differences amount to is the old stereotypes of the male being the hunter and the woman being the nurturer because of the stronger, much stronger social skills. And I just wondered, since these hardwired, and they also found that the genes, the same genes in males and females act differently on different parts of the brain. And you could actually see these on these pictures, these brain pictures. How does this influence your thoughts about stereotyping?
I mean, those are great points. So I can address it in a couple ways. For one, we have to really pay attention to, when we do brain studies, who they're doing scans of. And those studies were with adolescents and kind of early adults. And that's a really important thing to know because it's not infants. And so we know how we treat people and our experiences actually shape brain development. So it's not just that brains shape how we behave, but our experiences shape our brain in structural ways. And we know, for example, that girls are spoken to much more than boys are. They're read to more often. They have more verbal input from their surroundings. Parents talk to girls more than they talk to boys. And we know that those types of things can change girls' brains in very permanent and in structural ways. So part of it is when we look at brain differences in adolescents who have had, you know, almost 18 years of experiences, knowing that there's differences tells us some important things, but it doesn't really tell us about how those differences get there. So it's not the same as being hardwired, because it's actually It's just as much the result of experiences as it is the cause of experiences. So that's one thing that's really important to keep in mind. And we know, for example, things like differences in map reading. Boys are given a lot more experience with mental rotation tasks. So in other words, being able to kind of rotate shapes in space, which is really important for map reading. Boys are given lots more experience with that. Things like Lego play is great for map reading, and until very recently was really geared towards boys. And we know when you train girls with that, then they can achieve at the same level boys do. So I think that that stuff, that those brain studies are important, but we also have to keep in mind that those are in many ways kind of what my point is, in that when we treat kids differently from the moment they come into the world, it can lead to permanent differences that we then can't ever overcome. And so we have to really start and make sure we're not treating kids differently at birth, because we end up in adulthood with really kind of structurally different brains. And we know that they've done brain scans with infants, and there are very, very few differences early on. Most of the differences we see seem to be the result of experiences.
All right, so let's, I know we could go on all hour with this, mm-hmm. but going back to my my friends, the couple that had the baby shower, that they don't know if they're going to have a boy or a girl, and they have their gender neutral nursery, and they presumably want to do their best to not color code their child. What should they do to try to raise their child free of gender stereotypes?
Well, I think for one, they're doing a great first step, is that less focus on gender. So kind of trying to avoid the color coding and the labeling and all of the constant sorting and organizing the world based on gender. And I think the second one, and in some ways addresses the caller's point, is that we know that when we treat differently based on gender, it leads to really brain differences later on. So what I encourage parents to do is focus on what traits do we want to encourage in all kids. So we want all kids to be nurturing and empathetic. Therefore, all kids should have things like dolls, because we think that research shows that when you play with dolls, it fosters things like perspective-taking abilities and empathy and caretaking and nurturing. All kids should have that, because boys will grow up to be parents just like girls will. And so we want to focus on that trait. Other things that are important are spatial skills. So all kids should have Legos. Things that are like hand-eye coordination are important to foster in all kids. So all kids should play ball games and run around and play rough and tumble outside. So I think what parents can do is focus on what traits are important in these kids I want to raise into good adults, and how can we foster that in every toy choice and every activity that we provide for them. And gender should just be somewhat irrelevant to that, because all kids should have certain skills, traits, and abilities.
I'm reminded of a story you told in your book about being the I'm trying to remember now. It was that you were the aunt, and they had to hide a toy that that your niece had. Well, tell us about that.
Yeah, so she had a, and I'll say, I think someone had given it to her. I don't think her mom had bought it for her. But it was one of those makeup mirrors, right, with the girls sit there, and there's a mirror in front, and you push a button, and it says, "Wow, you look so pretty with lipstick on," and "Wow, your hair looks so pretty today." They had to hide it. Then they ended up taking the batteries.
They said you took the batteries out, though.
I just don't remember doing that. But yeah, it was that they knew that just the talking mirror, the talking makeup mirror, is a little too much for me to handle.
Yeah, but that brings up the point that as much as parents might be trying to take these gender stereotypes out of the lives of their children, you know, well-meaning friend is going to give your daughter a Barbie.
And so I'll say, and that's, I think, a big part of what I recommend then, is that one thing I do is we donate a lot of toys we're given. So we're given a lot of Barbies and things like that for birthdays or Christmases. And I have two daughters, so that's a kind of a common gift. We donate those. We don't keep them because studies show girls that play with Barbies have worse body image than girls that play with regular dolls. So we have plenty of dolls, just not Barbie dolls. And there's some other toys, that things like Bratz dolls and the Monster High dolls, that get donated as well. And then other times I just simply, when other adults say stereotypic things to my kids, I try to, once we've left that situation, help my kids recognize them for stereotypes. So when grandma says, "You know how boys are, they're so rough and tumble," when we get in the car to go home, I'll say, well, you know, grandma forgets that girls can be rough and tumble too. And so some boys are calm, but some boys are rough and tumble. And some girls are calm, but some girls are rough and tumble. Grandma kind of forgets that kids nowadays are a little different than they used to be. So I try to very respectfully help my kids recognize what the stereotypes are, because I can't edit them out. You're right. You just can't censor it. And so what I can do, I can censor it to a degree, but more importantly, I think, is to help my kids recognize the stereotypes when they hear them, so that they have their own language in their own head for, well, that's a stereotype and that's not really accurate.
Kyle in Waukesha is with us. Hi, Kyle.
Hello. Hi. I wanted to say thank you for your research and your information. I have a son. He's in college now. Mm-hmm. But as raising him, he's the only child I have. I kind of thought a lot of the stuff you're saying was, well, a little hogwash. And my sister had two girls, and I remember a time when I was taking them out to get some clothes and doing stuff with them. Mm-hmm. And I discovered there wasn't a single thing on the rack I could find that I was willing to buy for them.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, if this is what they're being taught is acceptable, no wonder they're wearing the clothes they're wearing.
Right.
And so the question kind of twofold I have is, how do we affect manufacturers and or, you know, overall group thinking? And secondly, because I did find clothing for them, and it really, they got ostracized at school. People didn't like them. How do you, I mean, and they both turned out great anyway. They're good kids. And but the point is how do we affect overall the behavior of society? And then the kind of what you were saying already, but to teach the kids that it's okay, people might react differently to you because you're different.
Thank you, Kyle. We're going to let our guest mull on those questions and answer them after we check the latest news. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Are you concerned about the gender stereotyping of children? Does it bug you that Target has a pink aisle for girls' toys and a blue aisle for boys' toys? Do you think that little girls and little boys are treated differently because of their gender to the detriment of both? Care to share any examples? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's now 6:37. We are talking with the author of Parenting Beyond Pink and Blue, How to Raise Your Kids Free of Gender Stereotypes. Christia Spears Brown is an associate professor of developmental psychology at the University of Kentucky. She also writes a regular online column, Beyond Pink and Blue, for Psychology Today. We just heard from Kyle in Waukesha before the news, who said that he had a hard time, and this was some time ago, it seems, mm-hmm. buying appropriate clothing for his nieces. Apparently, everything he was finding in the stores was too sexualized, skimpy, inappropriate, age inappropriate for his nieces. Mm-hmm. And he had a couple of different questions. First, let's talk about, he wondered, you know, what can parents do to influence what you can find in the stores these days?
I'll say, I mean, I don't have a great answer. All I know is that I have the power in my pocketbook, and so I don't buy those clothes. And there's some stores that are worse about it than others, and I don't shop at those stores. A lot of online places are good options. So again, it's really all I know is if I don't spend money on them, then ultimately they're not profitable, at least for my, you know, $2 worth.
Yeah.
And so I purposely shop at stores that I think sell appropriate clothes.
Yeah.
And it does. It's increasingly harder and harder to find non-sexualized clothes for daughters.
Yeah. So I guess let's talk a little bit about why that's happening. I mean, the manufacturers must think that people want to buy these clothes.
There has been a big upswing in the past. Really, it's been in the past 6 or 7 years of really sexualized clothes for young girls. So, for example, marketing of like bikini underwear, for example, for the 5 and 6 year olds. It's really hard to find a one piece bathing suit for my, I have a 4 year old and a 10 year old. It's becoming increasingly hard to find one piece bathing suits for them. By the time your daughter gets into like the age 7 or 8 and they kind of move up into the young, into the girls section of a department store, it's very hard to find things that aren't spaghetti straps or aren't somewhat low cut. Belly shirts are popular, so kind of the cropped shirts. Very short shorts are popular. It parallels a trend of just increasing sexualization on television and in toys and in movies. So our research looks at how much sexualized television there is, and that's increasingly getting marketed to girls. Things like the Monster High dolls and the Bratz dolls are highly sexualized toys.
Then Kyle went on to say that he eventually did find, he thought, appropriate clothing for his nieces, mm-hmm. but they must have been considered fuddy-duddy, stodgy stuff because he said that the girls were teased because of what they were wearing.
Yeah, and so I think that's the key in all of this. I mean, I think I talk a lot about in the book is that I really do try to reduce gender stereotypes with my kids, but I also recognize they have their own social pressures at school, and I don't want them teased. I want them to have friends and to fit in, although not have some of the negative ramifications of these stereotypes. So part of it is recognizing those social pressures and trying to work within them. So I do try to find my girls, the ones that care about it, clothes that they consider to be stylish. So I'm not putting them in kind of the burlap sack of clothing, nor do I make them wear boys' clothes because I know that that's not socially what fits in at school either. So it's a matter of finding, can you find clothes that are cute because that's kind of what they want, but that still cover their body and are appropriate for something for a kid to wear. So I think it's trying to find that balance to know, look, the rule is you have to be covered. You can't wear shorts shorter than this, and you need to be, you know, your chest needs to be covered up. But we can still find things that are cute and that you like within those parameters. And it is possible. It just takes a little bit longer to find them.
We have Rachel who emails, even the recent Disney movie Frozen, which is otherwise great, had the problem of early sexualization for girls. While the men and boys look normal, mm-hmm. the girls have freakishly huge eyes and Barbie bodies. Mm-hmm. And when I saw the main character become liberated by becoming super sexy, I really had to cringe. You also had some thoughts on the movie Frozen.
I do, and I mean, I have a very similar reaction to that person in that in some ways it's great. I mean, there's some big improvements over some of the earlier princess movies. My bigger concern with that movie is that it is nearly impossible for there to be movies in which a girl is a character in which love is not a predominant theme, either the finding of love or the pushing against love. But there's never a movie where a girl just goes on a great adventure or a girl just goes to do something. It always involves love as a theme. And that can be frustrating, as the parent of daughters, where you want them to know finding love is not the only goal in life. It's important and it's a big part of life, but it's not the only thing, and it shouldn't be the only thing my kids are thinking about. They should be thinking on great adventures and interesting, fun things. And boys have those movies, but girls really don't. And so not only are those princesses pretty sexualized, they often have big breasts, they often have low-cut dresses on, but they also are either looking for a man or talking about how they don't want a man. But that's always a theme, and that can be pretty frustrating.
Well, along these same lines, Helena emails, I am originally from Ghana, where children's clothing is hardly color-coded. Most clothes are in print and therefore multicolored. I was in Canada in 1980, and I saw a beautiful baby in a stroller and asked the mother the gender of the baby, and she was most upset, indicating that it is obvious the baby was a boy because he was wearing blue. Did your guest look at any cultural differences? Are there?
I mean, America seems to be one of the stronger gender stereotypers in many ways. Other cultures do too, but I would say we don't look at this cross-culturally as we ought to. And I mean, I'll say America is this interesting place, right? And that in some ways, these are really minor problems. You know, our girls don't get shot for going to school. You know, the issues that I talk about are really minor in lots of ways. Again, with the events of Nigeria and the things that you see in other countries right now, you know, when I talk about gender stereotypes, we're talking about how to maximize potential. We're not talking about major gender oppression. So in some ways, it's hard to compare across cultures because some countries have such strong segregation and such strong use of gender that it really is somewhat apples and oranges.
Well, let me take a break, and I know we have other callers who have questions and examples to share. We are talking with the author of Parenting Beyond Pink and Blue, How to Raise Your Kids Free of Gender Stereotypes. Do you find yourself treating children or grandchildren differently based on gender? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So do you buy little girls' dolls and little boys' trucks when you're toy shopping? And what's the harm if you do? We're talking about that with our guest, the author of Parenting Beyond Pink and Blue, How to Raise Your Kids Free of Gender Stereotypes, talking about why we color code and segregate our kids based on gender and why we shouldn't. And we are welcoming any questions you have or reactions or examples. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our next caller is Terry in Amro. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Yeah, I am continually ashamed of parents who teach their little boys that choosing a pink crayon is wrong, and they have to put it back. I've seen it, I saw it just yesterday, but frequently, I work with young children, and I'll see a little boy choose a pink crayon and then immediately throw it back into the pile, and it was just wrong, and I've questioned it. And yet, just yesterday, one of these little boys says, we can't choose pink, boys can't have pink, because something about manliness. And I thought, well, that was clearly taught by, you know, someone ignorant but close to that child. And I said, well, can I wear blue clothes? Yeah, you can wear blue clothes. We just can't wear pink. Mm-hmm. And it's disturbing to me.
Yeah. Well, what a reaction to that, Christia?
So I think what's interesting about that is the asymmetry, too. Where we see is that boys have, in many ways, gender stereotypes hurt boys even more than girls because boys are given such a narrow window for what they're allowed to do. Often girls are allowed to wear blue or to play with trucks or to be kind of a tomboy, whereas boys are really told, you venture out at all, you put your toe outside of what it means to be a boy, and you're going to get repercussions for that. And so the restrictions on boys are really just remarkable. If you can't even color with pink, of course you're not going to be allowed to cry or play with a doll or show any kind of range of human emotion. It's sad for boys because there's really not no such thing as a typical boy. The range is just too variable, and yet they're really told really early on, and it gets even worse by middle school, you have to be a certain kind of boy all the time or you're going to get made fun of or, told to behave differently.
Thank you, Terry, for the call. We have a couple of comments, contrasting comments on mm-hmm. Facebook. James writes on Facebook, what's wrong with letting little girls play with trucks and G.I. Joes? Let the kids play with the toys they want to play with. Sheesh. And then Matthew writes on Facebook, just let the girls play with dolls and the boys play with trucks and G.I. Joes. Enough mm-hmm. of this nonsense.
I think that it's great for girls to play with dolls. It teaches nurturing and empathy, but boys should also play with dolls because it teaches nurturing and empathy. That's my answer, is that you shouldn't restrict the feminine stuff from girls. The problem is when you restrict it, take it away from another group of kids.
You know, this was a long time ago. I remember hearing some study that was done where little girls and little boys were, tiny toddler infants almost, were sat down and given a choice of toys. And supposedly what happened is that the itty-bitty girls picked the dolls and the itty-bitty boys picked the trucks. There is no preference hardwired in their brains?
No, by 18, so up to about 18 months, boys also show preferences for dolls.
Mm-hmm.
It's this interesting phenomenon. It's once kids start to learn what boys are supposed to do and what girls are supposed to do, then you see kids push back against things for the other gender. So about 18 months, boys and girls show the same preferences for the same types of toys. But what we see over and over in lots of different studies, once kids learn their gender, so once kids can say, I'm a boy or I'm a girl, then you give them any kind of a toy and you say, this is a boy toy. The boys will want to play with it and the girls will reject it. If you label the exact same toy as something for girls, girls want it and boys push away. So again, this is why I think stereotypes are really important, because it's that once kids learn that I'm a boy or a girl, they want to be a good team player. Girls want to play with things that are supposed to be for them. And that starts really early. So by about 2 years old, you see, even in experimental studies, kids want to play with the toys they think are for their group. And by two, all kids know that dolls are for girls and trucks are for boys.
Holly in Milwaukee is with us. Hi, Holly.
Hi. I have the great joy of being a mother to four sons, and I have two sons that are older, in their 20s, and then I have a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old. And
wow.
I'm a little crazy. So when our fourth child was, when I was pregnant with him, we had a child that was about a year old, and we went in search of a baby doll for him to kind of prepare him for having a sibling. And store after store, all we could find was female infant dolls, mm-hmm. Nothing male, mm-hmm. all the accessories like Pepto-Bismol, bubblegum right. pink, which while I don't have a problem with, my son having a pink toy, I thought, why does it have to be pink? Is there right. nothing available in like a gender-neutral color, a stroller, a little toy baby stroller in blue or green or yellow or something? We ultimately gave up, and when baby was born, we've had both of our sons doing things like diapering their teddy bears and so forth. Mm-hmm. Like, we've kept smaller diapers around and tried to at least encourage that natural nurturing that they have through stuffed animals and things. But it's been frustrating not to be able to find those things for a boy. The other thing, that I'm a registered nurse, and my husband kind of laughed at me, but I've been really strict on trying to use appropriate names for body parts and things, not to use nicknames for all the gender-related body parts. And so as a mom who also breastfed my babies, my 3-year-old will, if he sees me getting dressed, he'll say, oh, those are breasts, and that's where you milk a baby. He knows that they're not a sexual object type of thing. I mean, I'm trying to teach them that, the right way. What
yeah.
I feel is the right way. So,
Holly, thank you very much for sharing those stories. That I had no idea that you can't really find a little boy baby, as she was trying to find for her son to prepare him for his little brother.
It is. I think that's it's an interesting thing where parents that are really trying have a real struggle. I'll say, not to do a big plug for this, but there's a company called Butterflies, and I actually took a picture of this from my Twitter at one point, is that they have a really cute boy doll. And they have Cracker Barrels down in Kentucky a lot, and they sell it there. And I remember seeing it, and it stuck out to me because it is so rare to see. But it's a cute little stuffed animal, it's a stuffed boy doll wearing kind of surf shorts and kind of a surf shirt. And I remember thinking, this is a great option for parents that want a doll for their sons that looks like a boy. But it stuck out because it is so rare. So, again, I recommend parents to go online, because you can find things online that you can't necessarily find in stores. I mean, I have a similar phenomenon where my daughter likes superheroes, and I was trying to find Wonder Woman, and it's incredibly hard to find a female superhero. Oh, so, again, yeah. I've had to search the internet trying to find Wonder Woman because, again, she likes superheroes, and I was trying to get her a girl, and that's also hard to find. You try to get out of the normal box, and it becomes increasingly harder and harder.
Let's go next to Peter in Fond du Lac. Hi, Peter.
Good morning. I have a 7-year-old daughter, and she played baseball for the last 3 years. And I'm kind of upset because in the next few years, she's going to be forced out of hardball and into softball. And I just kind of see softball as kind of, handicapping to the girls. Baseball is probably one of the best sports to be, become fully integrated. Yet she's going to end up having to play softball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, because apparently hardball is harder. I don't know.
It is funny that, I do think that parents, when you have daughters or you have sons, and I think these gender stereotypes really do hit home when you're trying to raise your kid in a certain way and you see society really push back against what you're trying to do. You see the rigidity of these stereotypes, at home, it can be particularly frustrating.
Yeah. Well, John in Milwaukee is with us now. Hi, John.
Hi, how you doing? I have just a simple question. Do you think that it's zero difference biologically, or is it that you're just trying to diversify to an individual level and not be prejudiced?
That's a great question. There are some differences, yes. So there's some differences in what's called inhibitory control. Boys have a little bit less inhibition when they're infants. Girls speak a little bit earlier than boys do. So there are some, but they're mean level differences. So it means on average, boys are a little bit less inhibitory than girls are. But the problem is the distributions are highly overlapping. And so knowing gender doesn't tell you much about an individual child. And so that's really the key, is that you got to, just because boys might be a little bit worse in terms of inhibitory control, it really tells you virtually nothing about what your son will be like or your daughter will be like. At best, most of gender buys you about 55% versus, 50-50 is just kind of random. Knowing gender at best buys you about 55% kind of odds of guessing correctly. What's called the effect sizes are really, really small because the distributions are so overlapping. So that's really more my point. Not that there's no gender differences at all, because there are a few. There aren't very many, and the differences that do exist are much, much smaller than are talked about in just kind of common discussions.
In our final minute, Christia, what would you like our listeners to take away from this conversation, or for readers to take away from your book?
I think one is that the differences aren't nearly as large as we think they are, but we focus so much on gender that it leads kids to create larger differences than exist naturally. And so to help kids just focus on the traits and skills we want all kids to develop, and help kids recognize the stereotypes when they see them so that they can combat them when they go out from your own home, they kind of recognize a stereotype when they see it as such.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Christia Spears Brown, Associate Professor of Developmental Psychology at the University of Kentucky. She is the author of the book, Parenting Beyond Pink and Blue, How to Raise Your Kids Free of Gender Stereotypes. She also writes a regular online column, Beyond Pink and Blue, for Psychology Today. Thanks to Robin Cherry for producing and directing this program. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air production. Hope you join us tomorrow at this time. We're going to talk with a guest who says the war on obesity victimizes women and children. That's tomorrow at this time. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.